The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
All right, as promised, I keep bringing up names of people associated with the Suns who I think much of, and they've been through there and done other things with their lives. And when I say they went through there, it wasn't like a painful journey. It was part of what they were about. And they still have deep feelings towards them. And one of those people I have to believe that has deep feelings is Tom Ambrose. I've talked about Tom. He was with the organization for almost 40 years. He wrote two books. Last time we had Tom on, it was Too Wacko, right? It was the second book that you wrote, Echoes from the Purple Palace. The first book was just Notes from Wacko, right?
Right, Notes from the Wacko File, right.
Yeah, there you go. How are you? You look great. What are you doing these
days? Oh, thank you. It's been an interesting couple of years, but we all survived and things are looking good. And the Suns are looking great.
So if you were to write a third book, do you have a third book in you on the Suns?
I just finished writing the book for Al Bianchi's family. Al more or less wrote the book, and I was assembling the book because he left us before he could finish. So his kids and wife asked me if I would continue to work at it. And so I did. I just finished writing it. We're working on the publishing end of it. And we should get that done, I think, by the beginning of next season. It should be available through Amazon.
That's awesome. Well, let me know, because I'll definitely want to talk about Al. He was sweet.
Yeah.
What are your emotions in watching this run this year, the last few months, from your view? Because you were there at the beginning to get this thing going and to see where it is now.
Well, it's interesting that this is the third time the Suns have been to the NBA Finals. The first time in 76, they barely made the playoffs. They got hot at the end of the season, won, I think, 23-14, I think, over the last part of the season. Made the playoffs the day before their last game of the regular season, and then went into the playoffs with a 42-40 record. And then went all the way to the NBA Finals. They played Seattle first, then Golden State, and then the Celtics. But that team was certainly not expected to be there. It was a bunch of veteran guys, really great, a couple of young rookies, Alvin Adams and Ricky Sobers. And they had a third one, John Shumate, who was traded for Garfield Hurd halfway through that season. And it's just the chemistry came together, and that's what I love about that team. But I also love about this current team is that chemistry with just a couple of new additions just came together beautifully. And if you love basketball, you love watching this team play because they move the ball, they play defense, they trust each other. Boy, they're masters of the pick and roll. And the mid-range jump shot, which has all but disappeared from today's NBA game, is back with the Phoenix Suns. So I'm really, really enjoying watching this team play. You know, conversely, the 92-93 team that went into the NBA Finals, they had the best record in the league. They were expected to go to the NBA Finals. It would have been an upset if they didn't. And they had, you know, Charles Barkley had a great, really deep roster. And, you know, you could argue that they should have beaten the Bulls, and they certainly could have. But this group is really fun to watch, and I think deserving of being in the finals. They've basically taken care of every confrontation, every challenge they've had in the season, and I think that chemistry is has been really, really great.
It's interesting, Tom. I get the, well, if Anthony Davis were healthy, well, if Kawhi Leonard were healthy, well, they weren't. So that's just the way it goes. Trying to diminish, it's, no, this is how a season goes. You can't help injury. So
it's, the NBA playoffs, especially once you get into them, I mean, it's a bit of a marathon, and it's a war of attrition, really. I mean, we got through our little portion of it with Chris Paul, with his neck injury and then his COVID situation and all that. That could have been disastrous for the Suns, and they could already have been eliminated, but they didn't. They survived that piece of it, and so hopefully we'll have good luck from this point on and take the championship.
Tom Ambrose with us for a couple of minutes as we talk about the Suns. As mentioned, there's several names of people in the Valley that I feel very good for, and Tom is one of those as well, with a long, long history with the organization. If you were to stack up teams, because now fans are doing that, and let's just go with the point guard position, and you have Steve Nash, and you have Jason Kidd, and you have Steph Marbury, and you have, you just go down the list of great point guards with this organization. Now you have Chris Paul, and KJ, of course, has to be in there too. So where would you fall in where Chris Paul is in terms of what he's doing for this team compared to the others? Because it's natural fans do it.
Yeah, I mean, we have a very limited sample size with Chris Paul, but it is a magnificent one. He's just played sensationally. I obviously have watched him play a number of years in the NBA, but for other teams, and always thought he was a pretty good player, but I had no idea. I mean, especially at his age, at 36, for him to be playing at this level is just extraordinary. And I'd rate him right up there with Steve Nash. And then, Kevin Johnson was a different type of point guard, but I think Nash and Chris Paul are really distributors, and Kevin was as much of a driver and slasher and point guard. He was more or less a combo guard, but did the job for us for sure. But I would put Chris Paul and Steve Nash right on the same plane, and then Kevin Johnson after that.
A couple other questions I'll let you go, and I appreciate your time, Tom.
Sure.
Had Al McCoy on, had him on a bunch, obviously, and asked Al about, how different is the vibe around the city from the 93 and 76 team, because the city has grown. And he said, Brad, it really isn't that much different. It's still, this is a Suns town. I've said that all along. I got here in 93, and it was pretty evident that this, it's nothing against the other organizations. It's just when the Suns are right, they're miles and miles ahead of any other organization in town in terms of fan passion and interest.
Yeah, I agree. It's I think the Suns have always been Phoenix's baby that, started here as an expansion franchise in 1968. And people just adopted it as their team. Whereas, and to a degree, the Diamondbacks are the same way, since they started as an expansion team. But the Cardinals, for example, coming from another city to take up residence here in Phoenix, is a different vibe for fans. But the Suns, even though it's been a decade since they've been really competitive and in the playoffs, all of a sudden that feeling has been rekindled, and the fans are back for sure. One of my favorite stories came from the playoffs in 1976. And I'm the PR guy. I'm kind of waiting in the end zone area. I'm going to grab a post game guest when game six is over. We're playing Golden State. They have a 3-2 lead. We've got to win the game to force a game seven in Oakland. And comes down in about the last 15 seconds. We have a 1-point lead, and Golden State has the ball, and they work the ball around. We do a great job of keeping it on the perimeter. But here is Jamal Wilkes in the right corner, and he's got the ball. And he, how he used to take that shot back from behind his head almost.
And swing it around.
And pretty much that corner jump shot was money for him. So he's about to launch a shot with about 2 seconds to go. And all of a sudden, here comes Garfield Hurd and just tips the ball and catches a deflection. And all of a sudden, the game's over. The horn goes off. The game's over. The crowd was so loud in that building that I'm standing there watching and looking and just taking in the moment. And all of a sudden I realized that my ears were just about to burst, that it was so loud. It felt like people were sticking knitting needles in my ears. And I actually had to cover my ears because it was so loud. And I understand that it's been that loud at the new arena, which is fantastic.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the new arena. That's a great story. The new arena, yeah. I saw Jerry at – I saw him in one of the games with the Lakers series. Saw him with one of the games in the Denver series come in. And it's good to see him at the arena, one. Two, the arena is spectacular. And it wasn't it's not a denigration of where it was, because it was this brand new, beautiful place. But it did show its wear and tear the last 10 years, kind of like the product on the floor. And I think that for me, it's the – you get out of COVID, you have a new arena that nobody's been in, the team's fun, the team's entertaining, people have been cooped up for a year, and they have this whole thing come together, and all of a sudden, it all works. And I don't know if you've been in the arena or not, Tom, but you just the thoughts on where Robert has taken the organization the last couple of years, from my view, where he's gone underwater a little bit, listened to some people, and brought in James Jones, and brought in Monty away from the Lakers or Clippers. And I think having Larry Fitzgerald there in some sort of way, just to say, you know, please stay out of the limelight, has been positive. Robert was cheered the night that James Jones was given the GM award. He took the mic center court and was cheered. I have not seen that. Haven't seen it.
It's he admitted that he's made mistakes along the way. And I think at the beginning, and more or less quoting him, he said, I thought this was easy.
Yeah.
And it turns out it's not. It's so he's learned his lessons, and I think he's obviously this is a great position to be in. I think back to 92-93, if you recall, we were leaving the Coliseum. The last game was played at the end of 92 and going into the new arena, so there was a sense of newness. We had new uniforms. We had Charles Barkley. We had all this newness. It was really closing the old chapter at the Coliseum and beginning a whole new chapter with the franchise at the downtown arena. And I think more or less the same thing is happening here. We're kind of closing that horrible few chapters that we had for the last decade and, you know, opening up hopefully a brand new and lengthy chapter, in a newly refurbished arena with I think we lost a whole generation of fans.
Correct.
10 years, a long time. So this is basically a new group. And I think they're as excited as we were back in 76 or in 92. So, good for them. And it's really fun to watch the TV coverage of all these maniacal fans just wearing all their gear and just going crazy. I love it.
Yeah, I'm going to Milwaukee with the team this coming weekend, and I'm going to go out to their deer park. I'm sure you've seen in Milwaukee where they have it. I'm going to go out there and see if I can find one fan, just one, who's wearing something Suns related. Or I might go out there and throw on a Suns hat and just see if I get pelted by cheese.
Be careful.
I know, right?
As I was listening to the TV broadcast, I said, are they calling that Deer Park or Beer Park?
Well, it's probably both. Sure. Probably a little bit of both. I appreciate the time and insight. Please get in touch and stay in touch when the book comes out. And appreciate it, Tom. Thanks.
Okay, Brad. Thank you very much.
There's Tom Ambrose, and we're back with more after this timeout. All right, as promised, Eric is with us. Eric Sorensen, Senior Executive Vice President of Everything or Nothing, depending on the day or the week, the month, the year. You were in the building last night. You are a native, and I texted you earlier, and you were effusive in praise. So I will just let the floor be yours. How was yesterday for you, not in the company side, but just as someone who's grown up here?
Pretty surreal, Brad. It didn't really sink in until I was walking from the parking garage onto the concourse, and I went to the front of the arena, and you see the big NBA Finals banner and all the people out in front taking pictures on their cell phones and all like the TV cameras and doing the people on the street interviews and things like that. There were people from other countries there, and it was just it just seemed like a big time event. And earlier in the day, when I went to pick up my credential, downtown was actually pretty dead. Yeah. So I'm trying not to compare 93 to present day. But in terms of like the atmosphere in the valley, I think it was way more chaotic in 93.
Okay. So when you walk into the building last night, goosebumps, or is it just, I got a job to do?
Oh, goosebumps. Yeah. Goosebumps. Because it just I don't know, it just hits different with the Suns. Because like you and I talked about last week after the Clippers series, you know, the Suns are the baby, as Devin Booker would say. They were the first team here. And I grew up like going to games in the Madhouse McDowell, and my parents watched every single game up until about 2013, and then took about 6 years off, and now they're back. Like everybody. So, it's pretty typical. So, yeah, it's exciting.
Okay, so the game happens, and what struck you about the game?
The Bucks might be too nice to win the NBA title. There are no Morris twins. There is no Pat Beverly.
PJ Tucker's there, isn't he?
Yeah, but no, because PJ Tucker's old, and he's not Pat Beverly. I mean, just isn't. Like, yeah. PJ Tucker's a nice player, but if you watched any of that Hawks series, if Pat Beverly and Giannis, I mean, if Giannis and PJ Tucker shoot a bunch of threes, the Suns aren't going to lose this series.
Right.
If Connaughton and some of those other guys, if Middleton keeps getting hot, the Bucks have a chance. But I don't know, Brad. I'm kind of starting to believe that this might be the year. Maybe.
See, I think Budenholzer cannot play Brook Lopez anymore. It's not like you go to the end of the bench, I'm not going to play you much, but when Brook Lopez is on the floor with Giannis, he just gets in the way. He's a load. And when Brook Lopez is trying to guard Chris Paul on switches on the pick and roll, forget it. It's over. It's done. This is pretty simple basketball 101. And we had Marcus Johnson on day before yesterday, the great Buck, who's their analyst, and he flat said, you know, Brook Lopez cannot do well on the pick and roll, and he didn't do well up until the Hawks series. He started playing a little bit better against Trae Young, and I'll be darned if last night it wasn't the exact same script where they just chewed him up and spit him out.
But the Suns have a great advantage with DeAndre Ayton. I mean, not only does he set great screens, but he presents a problem after he sets those screens. Because even if you have Giannis switching on to Chris Paul, then you're gonna get stuck like we saw last night with PJ Tucker or someone else trying to guard DeAndre Ayton. And that's the biggest problem for the Bucks. And I think you hit the nail on the head, Brad. I thought last night Monty Williams completely outcoached Mike Budenholzer. You know, Mike Budenholzer would call a timeout, make a little adjustment, they'd go on a tiny little run, the Suns would answer back. Like I never really felt like the Bucks were in the game last night. And for the Suns to just basically – the Suns didn't even shoot great. I mean, they shot 46%, which is okay. They didn't shoot threes well. If the Suns can just hold serve, they're going to win the NBA title.
Well, I'll tell you what. Cam times two, Cam squared, between those two last night coming off the bench, there wasn't like a feel – like I thought Bobby Portis would give them more. I kind of like him as a player. Middleton is a good player. Okay, they got some wiry athletic guys. They really weren't a factor in the whole buildup of Drew Holiday against Chris Paul became negligible, I think. And I was going through something you and I've talked about, and I've talked about with staff and guests and all that, is the best point guard in the history of the Phoenix Suns. And it's Steve Nash. Well, none of them have gotten this far. Kevin got this far, Kevin Johnson. But you have to start looking at it saying this is the best point guard in Suns history.
He's one of the best point guards in NBA history. And I asked Greg Esposito during the season, like, hey, so who would you take, Nash or Chris Paul? And he said Chris Paul, like, without even thinking about it. Yeah. And I said, even with the two MVPs? And his response was, yeah, Nash had a nice little five-year window. But when you look at the total body of work, it's not even close. Chris Paul is a much better pro.
Did you see any Bucks fans there?
On the concourse before the game, I saw two. Yeah. I honestly, Brad, I saw two. I saw a lady in a Giannis jersey next to a lady in a Bucks t-shirt, and that's it. And in the arena, there were, if I'm guessing, less than 100. I mean, it wasn't like the late, even the Denver series, you saw a lot of Jokic jerseys.
Yeah.
Last night, there were no Bucks fans there. And when I say no, I mean hardly any.
See, I'm going to Milwaukee on Saturday and for game 3 and 4 on Sunday. I'm going to go out to the Deer Farm or whatever is they call that, where all the fans are, and just try and find somebody. And I might even wear a Suns hat and see if I just get pulverized, if I just beer thrown, or if these people are really nice and they're just, hey, your team blows and we're going to win. Well, that's fine. Trash talk a little bit. But I might get cheese curds thrown at me. I don't know. And I'm just curious how Eric, because there's a game on Sunday and another game on Wednesday, I've got to be in Milwaukee for 5 days.
Oh, the next game's not till Wednesday?
Till Wednesday. 2 days off.
Oh.
So 5 days in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Nice people. Don't see it happening. Don't see it sitting there saying, man, this is great. This is awesome. This is amazing.
I would maybe see if the Brewers are in town. You could go to that. And what you could do, Brad, just jump on a train and go to Chicago and see your daughter. I know you just saw her.
My daughter, you know, take a train. No, it's clear. I'm going to do a show. I don't want the audience to think. I mean, I'm here in Lake Tahoe, for crying out loud. Son got engaged, and I'm going to go down to the golf tournament here today. And Charles is supposed to be here, supposed to meet up, maybe, possibly. I doubt it. But I can't go screwing around too much, but it's Milwaukee. Like the Laverne and Shirley Memorial or a brewery or something. But
yeah, I guess. I don't know. But like you said, Chicago's close. Like Chicago's not far. So
but your tone today is one of your celebratory. Like you see light at the end of the tunnel here. Like the Suns are going to win this thing.
No, I do. And, you know, I clowned on you when you put the magic numbers up during the Lakers series. But now now we're at 3. I mean, that's the reality of the situation. And I just think back to, like, if the Suns are playing the Nets right now, I mean, it would be the Nets would probably be favored. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I just look at this Bucks team and they've got 3 or 4 really good players, but they just don't have that thing. And as Charles Barkley said, like the Bucks just play dumb. And we saw it a little bit last night where there are just times where it's like, what's going on here? Like Giannis can get to the basket whenever he wants. Yeah. But he wants to play out on the perimeter and shoot those elbow shots. And if you want to shoot threes, go ahead. And we all know about his free throw issues. And I don't know. Like, game 2 is – if the Bucks have any shot, they pretty much have to win game 2. Oh, no, I'm not reinventing the wheel by saying that.
It's what team wins on the other's home court.
You know. Yeah, but the Suns are a good road team. Like, they've done well in the playoffs on the road. So Milwaukee better figure out a way to win game 2. Because if it goes back to Milwaukee and they're down 2-0, if the Suns just get a split, it's done. So
yeah, one last question. Rachel Nichols or Maria Taylor? Whose side are you on this? Do you know about this story?
I did.
Yeah. Side are you on this one?
Why do TV people think they're so important?
I don't know.
Well, that's my biggest thing. Like, I mean, I don't know. Like, I can see why Rachel Nichols would be upset. And ESPN has had so many internal problems when it comes to race issues, as you know. It's funny because I watched The Jump on ESPN, which Rachel Nichols hosted, and I was working yesterday, so I put on the DVR, and I went to watch it yesterday. No Jump. They had on Jalen Rose's show. You know, ESPN's not really saying much. They're just kind of keeping their mouth shut. But I'm more concerned about just trying to see the Suns win this championship.
I understand that. I'll let you go off that. Thanks. And would you do it again? Would you go to another game if you had the opportunity?
For sure. I mean, I already have my credential. And it's like a real credential, Brad. It's not like the little paper credentials that the Suns gave out, you know, during the playoffs. Like, it's the real thing. So, and I got my official NBA Finals mask as well. So.
Okay. I could send you to Milwaukee if you wanted 5 days.
I'm not going to be able to do that, but if you need me to cover another home game, I will.
All right. See you. Get out of here. Here's Eric Sorensen. And we're back with more after this timeout.